Gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this Wednesday, October 4th, 2017 edition of the Hagman Report. Joe Hagman, you're here, your co-host, along with John Robertson, filling in for my father, Doug Hagman, tonight. Doug is in studio in the office, just doing some stuff over there, and we got a great show lined up for you tonight. We have the first half hour open. We're going to jump into some news and current events. We got some information, updated information, out of the Las Vegas tragedy, as well as some information we're going to get into about the Spanish government and the populist independence movement that's going on over there that has not been receiving much attention in the U.S. media due to the Las Vegas scenario. Then we got, in the second half of hour one, we're going to be joined by Gerald Celente. And Gerald Celente is, he's been doing trends in the news for a long time now, and he does economic and political stuff, and we got a list of some of his forecasts and when they were predicted versus events that actually happened, and we're going to see where he wants to go tonight. Then in hour two, we have Gregory Manarino. He's going to join us. He's been a guest on the show before, and he's going to offer some unique insight into a number of issues. And then we're going to close out the program with Pastor David Langford. I'm going to bring on John. John, it's great to be here. And for folks that don't know, we do the Hagman Daily Show. John and I do 2 to 3 p.m. each day on Global Star Radio Channel 3, as well as Blog Talk Radio Live and Archive. And you can find all that on HagmanReport.com. Folks, go to HagmanReport.com, bookmark it, check it daily. And there you can not only check the Doug Hagman Show, but the Hagman Daily Show and our evening show, Hagman Report. John, welcome to the show.
Well, Joe, thank you so much, and it's such a privilege and an honor to be back here this evening. And one of the fun things about being on Team Hagman is sometimes you're never quite sure when you're going to sit in, or maybe you'll take a segment, maybe not. And fortunately tonight, I'm blessed to get to spend some time with all of you this evening. So, Joe, thank you very much, and of course, a very special thanks to Doug Hagman. We would be remiss if we didn't point out, just right out of the gate, at the Northeast Intelligence Network and Homeland Security U.S., and go to HomelandSecurityUS.com for the latest from Doug Hagman. Phones have been ringing off the hook all day long. There's information pouring in primarily about the Vegas tragedy, and I know, Joe, you're about to blow everyone's hair back with information that just broke a little less than 2 hours ago. A very special thanks to our friends at WorldNet Daily, specifically Michael Thompson, who, I want to be very careful, informed me of some of this, also informing me that it had not been fully vetted through WorldNet Daily's journalist or legal department as yet. Nonetheless, Michael Thompson is shrewd. He knows what he's talking about, and he keeps very well abreast of the news. So with that, Joe, why don't you Bring us up to speed. This story out of Las Vegas is almost just too much, Joe.
Yeah, we've been able to do a lot of analyzing of what had happened in Las Vegas at this concert, and there seems to be an overabundance of information about this shooter, Stephen Paddock, but none of it really seems to be too relevant in trying to understand the motive and what is behind this attack. Now, there have been what are known as internet sleuths, and Michael Thompson has also picked up on this, but there is interesting reports that this Paddock and possibly his girlfriend Delaney are connected to the intelligence agencies. And one interesting report that I've seen connects Paddock, who was a pilot, to a Defense Department intelligence community company called Volant Associates, where his plane that he owns apparently is registered to this company. Now, there's two sets of information on this plane on the internet, the FAA, which has a different set of information than flightware.com does. But according to sources, a source, and I haven't talked to Thompson, but John did, so we don't know which, if these are the same sources or not. But regardless, there is a Stephen Paddock that owns an SR-20, and it is registered to a company in Roanoke, Virginia, named Volant LLC, and the company works with the defense intelligence community. And some people are stating that this could be a connection for anything from running guns to running drugs via airlines. Now, I have not seen any evidence that he has flown recently, but if he's doing undercover, intelligence community type work, would that evidence even be forthcoming? I doubt it, but we got to keep digging and keep looking, because there is a huge hole in the narrative being given to the public by the mainstream media as to why this happened, and there is a lot more to be uncovered. Now, just to clear a few things up, I saw some video of, many people were saying that there is video out there of a shooter on the lower floors of the hotel. I saw some video today that showed that actual flash, that what looks like a muzzle flash, is actually some kind of light that was ongoing before and after the shooting took place. So the video that everybody saw of that the taxi driver took, as interesting as it is, it seems that light that is coming from the lower part of the hotel is not what many people think it is. And as John made the point earlier on our show, there is no broken windows on the lower floors, and there would be, you'd have to break one of those windows out to shoot from that. And just the fact that a half hour before the shooting took place, you see video with that light going off in the same place, in the same manner it was as the shooting was taking place, it's safe to assume that that was not gunfire. But there's still a lot of confusion. There is still more questions than answers in this story. One thing that is new since we were since we came off air yesterday is that the girlfriend, this Delaney, who was said to be in the Philippines or in Hong Kong or Japan, there's many differing reports, when the shooting took place, who was the girlfriend of this Paddock, has come back to the United States, was flown to LAX, where she was apparently interviewed by the FBI, but for whatever reason was free to travel or go as she pleases, answering their questions. We don't know. We don't know what happened there. It seems to be rather strange. And also, there has been a leak of some information from the hotel where Paddock was staying that shows that authorities were wrong and that he was actually there. They said he got there on September 28th. There's a receipt from a room service that showed him and another guest had room service 4 days before the shooting on September 22nd, or I'm sorry, 27th, one day before the police claim he checked in at this room. So some interesting information there. Drudge has a number of headlines up about this. The part about him taking Valium was also out there, and people were talking about that. I don't really think that's too much of an issue. And the main question, did the shooter get radicalized, or was his job, was he working with the FBI? Was he working inside these intelligence communities, doing some kind of undercover activity, whether it was running guns or drugs? That seems to be the question that people are asking now. Or was this woman connected to ISIS? Those seem to be the two, at least in my mind right now, the most likely questions to ask and places to go based on the information we've seen. John, what do you think?
Wow. Well, one has to wonder, when we start looking at these type scenarios, I mentioned today on the Hagmann Daily Show, and I was saying it sort of tongue in cheek, that I'm starting to feel like I'm reading the same script again and again and again, particularly when we look at the personal history, the personal attributes, the neighbors or families, commentary about the perpetrator in these mass shootings that seem to be getting worse and worse by the year. But Joe, when we look at the larger picture, when we start to look at this could seriously be a situation, and again, this is speculative. I want to be clear. We haven't had time to vet this. It just broke. But if, in fact, the perpetrator was involved in any type of narcotics transportation, drug running, if you will, for one of the intelligence agencies or for one of the subsidiaries of the intelligence agencies, then we have a situation where we have a major feature film about Barry Seal and the entire MENA, Arkansas story coming out, starring Tom Cruise, of all people. And at the same time, the possibility, and of course this story will develop over the next day or two, that the shooter in Vegas may have had some ties or connections to international drug running. Now, there are some other things that I find curious as well. This guy was considered in Vegas what they call a whale. And okay, that, and what that means is his wallet is full of VIP cards for everything from the high roller hotels to strip clubs to the steakhouses. This guy is known as someone who gambles and gambles high stakes. Therefore, they are treated very well upon arrival in Vegas. I would also like to mention as a side note that Las Vegas is, remains, and has been since the 1970s the suicide capital of the United States. And one thing I think we can agree on, Joe, is that the shooter did in fact kill himself before the SWAT team was able to infiltrate the room. But quickly, back to this, the story is becoming so complex. It's becoming so confusing on myriad levels. We've got the connection to the girlfriend. She's in the Philippines. She's wired $100,000. That's quite a bit of money for an average John, American to send overseas.
Do we know if he sent it to her specifically? Because I've heard reports that one, it was sent to her, but then I've just heard reports, read reports that said it was sent to the Philippines, and they did not determine where the money went. But I also had heard the interview the brother gave, where he said $100,000, the way he said it was, not everybody works at Taco Bell. $100,000 is not a lot of money to us.
Yeah, you know, and that sounds like that, and I'm sorry.
And he said he was trying to help out the girlfriend, but I guess I've never seen it. I guess I'll have to look to see if an official report was made that the girlfriend was the recipient of the $100,000. That's the question.
And Joe, you make a good point there. See, we are most literally in a situation where we have layer upon layer of questions and precious few answers at this time. But it's important that we apply critical thinking skills and have the intelligence, the audacity, I would even say the guts to ask these questions. You see, there's a fine line between critical thinking and wild speculation. And frankly, Joe, I think that's a line that we walk very well here at the Hagman Report. So, what we're dealing with right now are a couple of different scenarios, and this will develop over the next few days, and I wish that I could give each of you this evening more, but we just don't have it yet. We've got the Philippines connection. We've got a wire transfer of $100,000. Now, I did read this morning, Joe, that the FBI also noted that there were seven other financial transactions that they were looking at.
Okay.
As well.
And I'm looking at a report here that says 1 week before the Las Vegas shooter, Paddock opened fire on thousands of concert goers. He reportedly wired $100,000 to an account in the Philippines, according to NBC News. Paddock's living girlfriend, Danley, is from the Philippines. And it goes on to say that the week before, she on September 25th, when the money was wired to the Philippines, she was in Hong Kong. There remains a lot of mystery around the $100,000 money transfer, and I'm not sure that it's been confirmed one or another that the money was wired to her or not, but you said there were seven other financial transactions?
Indeed. When I was doing my show prep for the Hagman Daily Show today, it said that there were seven other financial transactions that were being looked at by the FBI, but there are two more points I want to make before we move on from this. And the first is, put yourself in the position of the perpetrator's girlfriend flying in, voluntarily, mind you, from the Philippines back to Los Angeles, back to LAX. She was met at the jetway by FBI agents, and she did not, at least we have no reports at this time, that she lawyered up. Now, if I were flying back from the Philippines as a person of interest, and person of interest, that specific verbiage has been all over mainstream media for at least 24 hours now. If I were flying back from the Philippines to LAX as a person of interest in the biggest mass shooting in the country's history, and I knew I were being met at the jetway by FBI agents, just for my own safety's sake, I would have legal representation there, Joe, simply because we live in a world now where you could be just trying to be the best American citizen you can possibly be. You say one or two wrong things, and you can find yourself in a world of hurt when you're being interrogated by professionals.
Did you ever see that video? I think it was of a lawyer or a police officer who gives the advice that if you ever have to talk to police for any reason, that you should always have a lawyer with you and say as little as possible, you know, answering questions with yes or no when possible. There was a very popular video a few years back that was on YouTube, people can find it, that, you know, tells you when you're interacting with police, especially in any kind of police investigation, that you, no matter what, no involvement to some involvement to actually, you know, being the culprit, you should always have a lawyer, because police are always looking to put charges on people no matter what, and you should always be have legal representation to know how to be best protected.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. In fact, there was a gentleman, his name escapes me at the moment, but he was interviewed a number of times on InfoWars back in late 2013, early 2014, and one of his key instructions through the course of his interview with Alex Jones, whenever you're speaking to law enforcement, be it municipal, state, or the federal authorities, you want to say as little as possible, because what's misunderstood about law enforcement in this country is that, yes, they are trying to solve a case, yes, they are trying to fact find, but at the end of the day, what they're looking for is a collar. They're looking for an arrest, and the bigger the felony, the better. So, Joe, what you mentioned...
Yeah, they want to close the case.
They want to close the case, and they want to close the case with, shall we say, some decorum.
And I'd say that they always want to get the guilty party, but, you know, we've seen cases hundreds of times in the past where innocent people have gone to jail for crimes they didn't commit. And unfortunately, as good of a justice system as we have, that does happen far too often. And there's a phrase, what is it, better that 100 men go guilty than one innocent man go to jail. And I think there's some validity to that, even though it sounds a little crazy, because we should, and our system of justice is great. You know, you have the rights of, you know, the perpetrators or the accused, where in other countries, you know, you don't even have jury trials, you don't have evidence presented, you just, you know, you get caught up at the wrong place in the wrong time, even, and then you can find yourself, you know, being, I mean, look at North Korea. What was that kid, that auto kid? He stole a poster or took a picture of a poster in North Korea. You know, they sent his body back. He was in a coma and he died 2 days later.
Yes.
When you have authoritarian rules like that versus the system of justice we have in this country, it's a difference between night and day.
It is. And I believe that was subsequent to the Warner Brothers feature film that came out in late 2014, which was that big spoof about, you know, the two bozo kids that go over to North Korea and
one that got allegedly hacked by online hackers, and they ended up releasing the movie on Netflix. And
yes, they did. And I'll tell you what, I worked for Sony at that time. I was working, what show was I on? I was working on CSI Cyber at CBS Radcliffe. That was the studio. And we had a deal with Sony Props, so we were renting an enormous amount of our set dressing from Sony Props, and I was at Sony every day during that hack. And I'll tell you, it was almost like a miniature version of seeing what a city would look like if we had some kind of super hack happen, where all of a sudden you couldn't buy gas, ATMs didn't work, the credit card envoys at grocery stores didn't work. I mean, at Sony Pictures on the west side of L.A., nothing worked. Nothing. They were handwriting passes at the gates. They were handwriting manifests for hundreds and hundreds of items of props. So, it's certainly our justice system is not without its faults. And, you know, interestingly, Joe, I wouldn't mind hearing from more cops. studio@hagmanandhagman.com. Remember, there's two N's on Hagman and spell out the word and. Given all the law enforcement that view our show and listen to our show, I'd like to hear some more opinions from some of the professionals, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. always very valued opinions, and whether it's about this Las Vegas story or anything else, we would love to hear about it. We got just a few minutes left before the break. I want to make sure we take some time to hit on this story, because I believe if Las Vegas did not happen, this would be the number one news story probably in the international media from the weekend till today. Catalina moves to declare independence from Spain on Monday. Now, we saw a vote, a referendum on Sunday. It was a banned referendum where the police were dispatched on the population that was voting, and anywhere between 800 and 1,000 people were injured in violent clashes with police as they tried to prevent the vote from taking place. This article goes on to say Catalina will move on Monday to declare independence from Spain after holding a banned referendum, pushing the European Union nation toward a rupture that threatens the foundation of its young democracy. Catalan President Carles Puigdemont, I'm terrible with names, said that he favored meditation to find a way out of the crisis, but that Spain's central government had rejected this. Prime Minister Rajoy's government responded by calling Catalina to return to the path of law first before any negotiations. A Catalan lawyer from the pro-independence Popular Unity Candidacy Party said a declaration of independence would follow a parliamentary session on Monday to evaluate the results of the October 1st vote to break away. We know that there may be disbarments, arrests, but we are prepared, and in no case will it be stopped, she said on Twitter. Now, this push for independence from Spain and the European Union is said to be, as we covered on the Hagman Daily Show today, some people are saying it's more dangerous than Brexit. Some people are saying that this is going to be a domino effect where we're going to see a number of other revolution/populist movements in other countries in the European Union that want to break away and want its independence. And one of the things that we're going to have to ask Gerald Celente about is not only the constitutional crisis in Spain, but Spain is the Eurozone's fourth biggest economy. And the article here from Reuters says that this has shaken the common currency and hit Spanish stocks and bonds. Madrid's borrowing costs have risen sharply and reached their highest since March on Wednesday. And the cost of insuring against potential losses on Spain, bank debt, and Spanish, Italian, Portuguese sovereign debt has also jumped, suggesting an impact on the wider Eurozone. So it'll be interesting to see if the Catalina does declare its own independence, what impact this will have on the European Union as a whole, specifically in its financial markets. And the Spanish king said he's disappointed by people in Catalina by failing to call for dialogue and accused King Felipe of endorsing the politics of Rajoy, the other president, which has been catastrophic for Catalina. But the real question is, the breakaway from the EU and Spanish governments and the impact on the financial markets, what will they be? As well as, will we see other countries and people within other countries push to move away from the European Union style of government towards what we're seeing as a more pro-independence, pro-liberty style of government? And I think it's something, historic is really going on here. And John, we've been talking about World War I over these documentaries that you've been watching, and you talk about how Europe, the lines of Europe were redrawn after World War I, and it's like we're seeing them, being redrawn again here, even from, East Europe and parts of Asia, from Russia and Ukraine now to West Europe with Spain. And who knows where it's going to stop, but it should be interesting to see. And again, I believe this would be one of the top stories not for what we have seen in Las Vegas.
It absolutely would, and I'd like to submit to the listeners and viewers tonight that it is not going to stop. The title of tonight's show is Worldwide Humans Demand Liberty, with our very special guests, Gerald Celente, followed by Gregory Manarino, and then, of course, as always in Hour 3 on Wednesdays, We're blessed to be joined by Pastor David Langford, but I'm so excited that Gerald Celente is coming up next. And I don't want to steal Mr. Celente's thunder, but humans worldwide demand liberty. Now, I'm going to place this in a spiritual context, but there's a financial context as well. In a spiritual context, humans have a natural void in them, a space where a seed may be planted. And that seed is the seed of liberty that must be present in all people worldwide. And here's the reason why. Without that personal liberty, you cannot make a decision. You cannot make a choice for Jesus Christ. You cannot make a proper choice to be a Christian and follow the path of Christ, which ultimately leads to an eternity with our Lord God Almighty. So it is one of the distinct strategies of the globalist tyrants to remove the liberty from humanity all over the globe. And I'll take this one step further, and I'm sure Mr. Celente will pick it up from there. The EU is a debt slavery scheme. That's what it is, and that's why I chuckled when you said the King of Spain was a little miffed by what's going on, because the fact of the matter is there are over 500 million people in the EU. The EU was never voted on by popular vote or referendum, and they are kept together by a debt-driven economy, and they are enslaved by the common currency, which is the euro, and frankly, the United States of America and the U.S. dollar via the petrodollar is not far behind. Joe?
We got a guest coming on before Mr. Celente, and we're going to bring him on now.
Not quite a guest, Joe.
All right.
John. All right. You got me?
We got you loud and clear.
555,
right.
Welcome.
All right, good. Doug Hagman reporting from the field. I don't want to take any time away from Gerald Celente. I don't want to take any time away from you folks. I just want to let people know, look, with respect to the Las Vegas shooting, just an update, what Joe said, what John said, I was able to hear part of it. There's more to the story. I am right now, sometimes you just have to put the rubber to the road. You've got to go out and you've got to make some contacts. Use unconventional communications. I'll just leave it at that. We're getting information about a huge backstory that has yet to be said, yet to be told about the shooter in the Las Vegas case. I want to make it clear. I want to make it perfectly clear. Everything that happened in terms of the deaths, the death toll, the injuries, the whole situation that did happen, you know, that there was mass carnage, there was a mass shooting. However, with respect to the suspect, the alleged shooter in this case, there is a backstory that would be reminiscent of I'm going to say the Oswald to Barry Seal to some of the Maynard dealings, Maynard Arkansas dealings, to an incredible proprietary footprint by the intelligence agency. I am absent from the studio, abruptly leaving the studio to actually make the contacts in the field to bring our listeners, the people tuned into this show, the exclusive information that will be developed from this contact, in fact, multiple contacts, but one in particular in Las Vegas who's got some information. And I'll just tease it with this. There's a lot of video evidence that exists in Las Vegas that has yet to see the light of day. There are a lot of records that were expunged before the shooting of the suspect. Two hints that should tell you as much as you need to know. I don't want to leave people hanging, but again, I don't want to take any time away from our guest, but just please stay tuned to the Hagman Report in the coming days, HomelandSecurityUS.com, HagmanReport.com, the show itself, and all of our platforms, because when this does see the light of day, I do believe that we are going to see something that that's going to be earth-shaking. And I want to say this. The reports of the ISIS connection and Antifa, look, none of this has to be, or nor is it mutually exclusive. I just want to say that yes, those are correct. The motivation, regardless of the motivation, there's more to the backstory from this alleged perpetrator, as well as, or that connects to, the family lineage. I'll say that as well. So don't rule out, just because I'm doing what I'm doing and giving you the information, that does not, that's not meant to rule out the Antifa literature or the anarchist literature or the communist or ISIS connections. Those, again, it's not mutually exclusive. I'm doing what I feel like I do best, and that's investigate. And again, I just wanted to pop in real quick just to give the listeners an update, because this is, of course, what we get paid to do, right? This is what we do for our listeners, just to make sure that they've got the most cutting edge information, most accurate information. We don't have to be first, but we have to be correct, and that's all I wanted to say.
Let me ask you one quick question, because I'm seeing conflicting reports. Do we have any further information on where the $100,000 to the Philippines went? I'm seeing multiple reports. Some are saying they were wired to the live-in girlfriend's home country, but they don't specify. Like this article from NBC News says they don't know if it's her family, or for another purpose, telling me that they really don't know where the money went.
Well, I can tell you, I know where the point of... I know where the money was transferred to. I'm working tonight and for the foreseeable future to determine the disposition of the funds following that the transfer.
Okay,
so specifically, not with any degree of specificity today, right now. I hope to know that here shortly.
Well, thanks for calling in and with the updates, and we will have you back here tomorrow, and we'll get into more of this as the information comes forward.
Indeed. Folks, tune in to tomorrow. Doug Hagman Show at 9. Joe and John Show at 2 to 3. And, of course, the Hagman Report flagship show from 7 to 9, or 7 to 10. And God bless our listeners. God bless Gerald Salenti. And, of course, all of the guests tonight. Thanks for sitting in for me, John. Good night.
And God bless you. That was Doug Hagman, and he is in the field this evening, Northeast Intelligence Network and Homeland Security U.S. Again, go to HomelandSecurityUS.com for the latest from Doug Hagman. But really, Doug is at his best, and frankly, Joe, I would say he's happiest when he is boots on the ground, burning some shoe leather and trying to get to the bottom of these miasmas of narratives and fake news and real news and money transfers and international drug running and is it the Philippines and Hong Kong and all the rest of it. That's where Doug Hagman likes to play ball. And you know what? He's good at it. And again, I'm honored to sit in the big chair tonight. So thank you, Doug, and thanks for checking in.
Well, with us now is Trends Journal's own Gerald Salenti. Gerald Salenti is the founder of the Trends Research Institute, the Trends Journal, and host of Trends in the News. He's been on Hagman Report before, a political atheist who's developed an excellent ability to forecast and manage trends. Mr. Salenti, it's great to have you back on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I see that your summer issue of Trends Journal, you talk about market crash, market correction, and then you give the trend. Let's start with the market, the U.S. market. We've seen a lot of volatility in the cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. If we can't start there, what's going on in the world of cryptocurrencies?
We believe cryptocurrencies are real. It's the future. You have people like Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan Chase, you know, saying it's a fraud. Well, he should know what a fraud is. I mean, after all, I mean, how about the six banks, the major banks that were convicted of fraud? But, of course, nobody ever goes to jail for that. In a neo-feudal society, the economic elite get a free ride, as with the political nobility, only clamp down on us. But he's calling it a fraud because it's the end of banking. You don't need banksters anymore, cryptocurrency. And cryptocurrency, my generation, it was gold. The millennials, it's crypto. And for a lot of reasons. Take a trip to China. Bap, your app, you're paying. That's it. Boom. No cash, no in God we trust, they have no connection to it. And they're hip to the jive that fiat currencies aren't worth the digital paper they're not printed on. So why would you go with a digital currency or go with a fiat currency? Because central banks can keep printing all the fiat currencies they want, have nothing to back them up, but you have limitations on cryptocurrencies. So the younger generation see this as the future, and so do we. And so do other countries, like Japan. Just came out with the J-coin, the digital currency. So some countries will fight it, other countries will embrace it, but if we see it, it's just going to keep on growing. Are there going to be ups and downs? Of course there are. And the more ups and downs are going to happen, as like with China, when they banned the Bitcoin people from the Bitcoin exchanges from operating. But that doesn't mean WeApp isn't going to go in a different direction and people will still buy them. So we see the clampdown on governments, but we still see the rise of them. And I want to go back to China for 1 second. Cryptocurrencies got their big rise back in 2016 when over 90% of the market was driven by China. And do you know why? Because the yuan, the Chinese currency, was crashing. And people, again, I don't want to hold on to this thing. I got to go somewhere else. So they went into crypto. They went into Bitcoin. That's what drove Bitcoin prices up initially. Then China clamped down on it. Now South Korea, Japan, and other countries is driving it up. But going back to China, remember, they can't clamp down on Bitcoin when the yuan was crashing because people wanted an alternative. Guess what? Chinese exports are down. Their economy's slowing. We believe the Chinese are going to be devaluing their yuan to boost up their economy, and they have a debt-to-GDP ratio of 300, and they don't want people bailing out of yuan. That's why they're banning Bitcoin.
Mr. Salente, John Robertson here, sitting in for Doug Hagman this evening, and thank you so much for joining us. And it is truly an honor to speak with you this evening, sir, particularly at this juncture with where we're at in the global news cycle. In fact, I titled this evening's show, in the spirit of what I've heard you teach over the last 7 or 8 years that I've been apprised of your work. And that is, of course, worldwide humans demand liberty. And, Mr. Salente, two things come to mind. I'm going to shoot you with a two-part question here. The first is, I would love for you to comment on how accurate you have been, sir, going all the way back to 2010, which is when I first became aware of your work, Trends Journal. The big question back then was, when is the big it going to happen? Okay, we were printing money around the clock. Was it going to be an economic implosion? Would it be an EMP? What on earth is going to happen? But astute, awake Americans, what we call red-pilled now, knew that an SHTF moment was coming. And you were emphatic back then. I never once heard you digress from the point of view that the it is already happening. It's happening globally. It's happening around the world. So I'd like to ask you to comment on what we see today, for example, in Spain. And then a second question, a follow-up question to that is, regarding Bitcoin, I've read some interesting stuff lately that the newer generations, the millennials and the Gen Zers, are getting so into the virtual reality world, the whole VR quasi world, if you will, that blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies are actually going to be the drivers of this entire new virtual reality industry. Sorry for the sort of diversity in questions, but Mr. Salente?
Yes, that's what I was saying. The millennials, Bitcoin is their goal. It's the same. My generation was gold. There's a cryptocurrency for the exact reasons that you said. And more, the world is going cashless. There's nothing there. Again, there's no in God we trust to hold up. You don't see, you don't touch it, you don't feel it. Why do I need it? I don't want to deal with it. I'll deal with something else. So that's why we see the growth in it. And it's very interesting you mentioned what's going on in Catalonia, because you're one of the few people that's mentioning that. Could you imagine, and people have seen, I'm sure, the videos of these stormtroopers grabbing women by their hair. These aren't men. Men don't do that. These are little boys with cojones much smaller than a mothball. that have to get off on being tough, dressed in black, and you can't see their face, and want to punch a woman.
Amen.
Because they'd never punch out a guy man to man, because they don't have it. So, no criticism from the European Union. No criticism from the United States. The opposite. The people should not have the right to vote. They should be slaves under the global society. No outrage. Now let's turn this picture around. Let's suppose what happened in Catalonia last Sunday happened in Russia. And the Russian little boys were beating up little women and old men and women and smashing their faces to the ground and breaking down doors to take ballot boxes and stop them from voting. It would be all over the prostitute news. Look at those low-life, slimy Russians, they would be saying. But hey, not when it's a criminal in our game, man. This little boy, Rajoy, never worked a day in his life, the prime minister. A prime piece of crap. A little lowlife. No outrage of this. The exact opposite. I'm glad you asked this question. Because here's something to quote. This is from the French economy minister, Bruno Le Maire. I guess he's transgender, Bruno and Marie, because we don't know where this guy's coming from. He says, quote, all these decisions are matters of Spanish sovereignty. What would we say if the Spanish government started giving opinions on the situation in France, on the ways we handle issues of public order? All these decisions belong to the Spanish government, and they are its exclusive responsibility. Hey, Junior, how about that little piece of crap Sarkozy, who is the president of France, that overthrew, along with Barack, the Nobel Peace of Crap Prize winner Obama, Hillary Clinton, Samantha Power and Susan Rice, that overthrew the Gaddafi government in Libya because we didn't like the way he was treating his people. Hey, Bruno boy, or is it girl, how about what the United States did to Yugoslavia? They never even had a referendum. Oh, that was Slick Willie Clinton. Yeah, a murderer with a long history of bombing and slaughtering people in Iraq. 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of five. Hey, he wants to start a war and slaughter people because we don't like the way they're treating them. Then that's all right. Hey, I got another one for you. How about Assad has to go because we don't like the way he's treating his people over there in Syria. But yet, in full view of the entire world, these little boys of nothing beat up helpless women and old people, smash their faces to the ground, fire rubber bullets at them, and no outrage.
You're exactly right, Mr. Salente. And I want to ask a follow-up question on Catalonia. What do you, one, do you see this as a domino effect of other countries having a populist-type revolution towards independence away from the EU? And then two, what will the impacts on the financial markets, both from the countries declaring independence and the EU, be if we'll just say with Catalonia, and then if there is a domino effect?
If Catalonia breaks away, and they're going to do everything they can to stop it, it will only have a minor negative effect on the euro for a short time. All the currencies are in problems. The only reason the dollar is strong is because the other problems going on. What people aren't talking about in Spain, you have, you know, the younger generation, it's like 38% unemployment. You have about a 19% unemployment rate. All the money, and that's why the people are revolting, all the money's going to the 1%. And this isn't, you know, this isn't just talk. It's fact. 8 people have more dough in the world than half the world's population. In America, Obama used to brag, folks, and boy, did he folk us really good, because he lied his way into office, didn't do anything he said he was going to do. He goes on to say, you know, I created all those jobs. Well, oh, yeah. According to the Harvard-Princeton study, all those jobs you created, 94% of them temporary work. 51% of American people working full-time are earning $30,000 a year or less. Oh, yeah, we have that high employment rate, yeah. But we all know, and they know on your show, that the labor force participation rate is at about, what, 38-year lows? And once you're not collecting unemployment, you're no longer counted. So going back to what's going on with the populist movement is a freedom movement. It's a movement against globalization and multinationalization. The only people that have benefited from these low interest rates are the companies that buy back their stocks and all the merger and acquisition activity. When I was a young guy, there was no such thing as hedge funds or private equity groups. There were laws against it. So we, the little people, could have an even shot at making it. No more. It's gone. And that's why they're revolting. They're going to do it in Spain. They're doing it in Italy. They're doing it in Austria. You just saw it happen in Germany with the AfD party, the Alternative for Deutschland. And what do they call it? A right-wing radical party. Oh, right-wing radical party. We don't want a lot of foreigners coming into our country and destroying our heritage and our ethnicity. Why, how dare you say that? We should be all nothing. Oh, and nobody ever talks about, hey, why are all these Syrian, Iraqi, and Afghan and other refugees coming in? Huh. Let's put together a blue ribbon panel, pay our friends a lot of money, and they could come up with a BS solution rather than saying, these are refugees from countries that the United States and its coalition of the killing have bombed into obliteration, and they have nowhere to go. And Amen. Then go back to Libya. And again, we wrote this in our Trends Journal as it was happening in 2011. All of a sudden, 500,000 refugees leaving Libya after they got rid of Gaddafi. Gaddafi made a deal with Berlusconi in Italy that no refugees would be coming in, migrants flowing out of Africa. And he warned the European Union, you get rid of me, you are going to have a migrant crisis that you won't be able to handle. What we have are psychopaths and sociopaths running a government near you.
Mr. Salente, my goodness, incendiary words from a noted political atheist. And Mr. Salente, I know that you do in fact believe in the Lord God Almighty. And I was just reminded as you were commenting, sir, on Deuteronomy 28. And for our listeners and viewers who do from time to time read the Bible, I always recommend reading Deuteronomy 28. It is a chapter in Deuteronomy that spells out the first third of the chapter are the blessings of a nation that submits to God Almighty, and the last two-thirds are the curses. And I challenge any listener or viewer to the Hagman Report this evening to go through the last two-thirds of Deuteronomy 28 and match it to the New York Times, the USA Today, the Wall Street Journal, Le Monde, BBC, what have you, and I challenge you to tell me that we are not exactly there today. Mr. Salente, I want to ask you a question about President Trump. I have been hoping, sir, for a big, fat Christmas present under the tree with a big red bow on it that looks something like I get to keep more of my money every week. Because to be honest, Gerald, the government, between the federal government, state taxes, and all the other hidden taxes, they're taking more than half of what I earn a week. And at 45 years of age, it's tough to get ahead, sir. Do you think we have any chance whatsoever of a big fat Christmas present from President Trump?
Unfortunately not. You know, we, again, you know, you mentioned about our forecasts over the years. I got it wrong after 2010. I thought the crash would happen. But I had no idea they'd make up, because tracking trends is an understanding of where we are, how we got here, and where we're going. In the how we got here, there was never such a thing as quantitative easing and zero interest rate policy. So we made our forecast based on what was, not making up these things that we're going to enrich the rich, lower the interest rates, which is basically a war on savers. Because we, the everyday people, have, if we don't gamble in the markets, we have no place to put our money. And in the old days, you put your money in the bank, you get a nice return on it, certificates of deposit, and then you retire to Florida. Those days are gone. So going back to the tax cuts, unfortunately, and it's in the Trends Journal, and we were the first. I would challenge anybody on these two issues. In the Trends Journal in May of 2016, we called Trump a winner. It's right there in black and white. And a week after Trump got elected, we did a 180 on the economy and said, no, no, this market rally is real. And now we're going into what, 11 months in just a couple of days, and in just, you know, 7 days from now, it'll be 11 months of the Trump rally. Why? Because it's fueling what kept the rally going, and that is it's benefiting the rich. From what I know in reading the little bit of information that's out there, because they haven't put a lot out, and I've read all of it, the tax breaks are going to benefit mostly those that need it the least, and that is the billionaire club and the big multinationals. You go back to Trump on the campaign trail. These people can't keep sending their money overseas. Yes, they can. Oh, we'll tax it one time, and then you get a free ride again. You and I can't open up a business in the Cayman Islands. So, number two, we're going to do away with them estate taxes. My father, may his dear soul rest in peace. Oof, I really benefited from those estate taxes. He left me a 1977 AMC Eagle, and I could have killed the car guy that sold it to him. It was a piece of junk. So what do? Right now they have a tax on estate taxes. I think it's over, I'm not quite sure, but I think it's like around $3.5 million to $5 million. And after that you have to pay estate taxes, not under the Trump plan. So the rich get to keep all their dough. And then you go back to Eisenhower years, and even the Reagan years. There's these, the Buffetts, the Gates, the Bezos, you know, all these people with their billions, they didn't have billionaires back then, multimillionaires, they had a tax rate of 90%. And now Trump is lowering it from 39.5 down to 35. So mostly what I see now, and then the other data, it's not going to help us much at all.
Okay, Mr. Salente, in Trends Journal in the spring in 2016, you did predict Trump would be president. We actually have a list of a number of predictions that you've made over the years that have come true. And folks, go to his website and subscribe, listen to his show, Trends. Trendsresearch.com. There you can get Trends Journal. That's the Trends Research Institute. And all the information is also on HagmanReport.com and the show write-up for today. Mr. Salente, I want to ask you this. We only have about 2 minutes left. How long do you expect this this confidence in the market to continue? Do you see this going through the holiday season into the new year?
October is always a rough month when things really go down. If it doesn't happen in October, probably won't happen until March. We're estimating a 10% correction, only because it's gone up so high. We don't see a crash, other than a wild card. What happened in Catalonia is a wild card, man-made, or made by Mother Nature with the hurricanes. And the Trump card's a real wild card, so anything goes with that one. But absent a wild card event, yes, we see a correction, but we don't see a crash. And October is the month that it usually happens. And again, you're looking at global data as well. and things aren't as bad as they used to be. You're looking at global trade going up. You're looking at a lot of positive elements. And with the tax breaks, again, as long as the market stays strong, that keeps confidence up. And right now, business confidence is very high. So we don't see a crash coming absent a wild card.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Salente, you know, it is such a treat to have you join us on the Hagman Report. And during my tenure as the producer of the program, I was just amazed that we had not been graced with your knowledge and your prescience. And frankly, your cojones, sir. And I'd like to say something else before we let you go this evening. I am in full agreement with you about the optics we saw out of Catalonia. It does not take a man to strap on RoboCop battle rattle and bash a 55 or 65-year-old woman across the nose with a collapsible baton. A lot of bloody ballots went into the boxes in Catalonia, and my prayers go out to those people. And again, I titled the show in part with you in mind this evening, sir, and that is Worldwide Humans Demand Liberty. Folks, go to trendsresearch.com. Gerald Salente has been our guest. He has been correct on so many things. It's just unbelievable, not the least of which spring 2016 Trends Journal, Trump would become president, and he certainly did, our 45th president of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
And subscribe to his YouTube channel, Gerald Salente. There, subscribe right to his YouTube channel and follow his updates. Mr. Salente, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you back on.
Thank you, and thank you for all that you do.
God bless you. We'll be right back after this network break. Don't go anywhere.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. But what Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right? You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available, anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greenovative.com. That's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad friends much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com. PreciousTimberProfits.com.